to the proposed key messages? No.
No, the 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so we have the idea behind a comprehensive communication strategy is first and foremost to identify your goals and objectives, essentially what you want to achieve by
what you want to communicate.
Exactly. And then it's the who. Who's your target audience? And then it's the what. What are you trying to convey? And then how do you do that? And then the how is the communication channels. Content calendar is sort of a newish term. It refers to social media content calendars. So all of that work that Amelia does to put stuff up on our various platforms, that can be mapped out on a content calendar in order to ensure that there's regular, you know, posts.
Some regular things that go in, yeah.
Yeah, because some businesses, as Amelia, you know, indicated, are quite complicated in their approach, and they pay or they have volunteer stuff, but there's just like a barrage of communications. You've probably been the recipient of some of those. Mm-hmm. So that content calendar is intended to assist with making sure that you've got something out there regularly.
I want to comment on that one briefly, on thought. Because we rely on printing and mailing of the pipeline, I think we need to pay extra attention to the content that goes into the pipeline relative to the timing of events. And two things come to mind in particular. One is, back in July, the pipeline had some great information about July 4th activities. Unfortunately, it wasn't received in the mailboxes until July 7th. Mm. So that information really, at that point, was moot. So I know it's a function of, you know, when the article's written, when it goes to the printer, and we're thinking ahead, but in fact, by the time it hits the mailbox, the information is outdated.
Yeah.
There was a similar reference, I don't recall, Mimi, I think it actually was in the business manager's message, and there was, and it may have been the reference to the town hall, and I think that was it. But anyway, there was a timing issue there as well, where, you know, you're writing an article thinking ahead for the coming month, and by the time it reached the mailbox, something that you had mentioned was already passé. So
yeah.
I think we just, as you develop that content calendar, you know, that'll be something that you really have to think about. You know, it doesn't do any good to talk about New Year's stuff in the New Year's pipeline, yes, of the January pipeline, because it's already happened, for example.
Yeah, and I should also explain that it's not just the pipeline creation that is a factor in the timing of it. It's when they've done the meter reads and when the bills are ready to go out.
Right.
And because our meter reads are manual, largely, they always mess it up. You know, so, I mean, they always mess up the timing of it going out on the 25th. And we do post the pipeline as soon as it's ready on the website.
Right.
So there's multiple ways. But, yeah, point well taken. We got to figure out a way to address the timing of this.
And I'm sensitive to this because I may have mentioned before, when I worked for one of the unions, I was required to write a business agent's article for our monthly newspaper every month. But in fact, it didn't come out until 45 days after I'd actually written the article.
Oh, God.
No.
So it
you
always
start a year ahead of time.
So it always had to be about stuff that happened
retro
before,
yeah.
Unless I looked really far out and anticipated something coming up. And generally it was reporting about things we'd already done, so that wasn't as much of an issue.
Yeah.
And we had other ways of communicating things that had a more current time frame on them. But that's, like I said, I know it's like, God, we did that 3 months ago and we're just now getting a read about it in the local news, you know, in the local union's newspaper. So anyway, thank you for
I'm glad you brought that up. I think we can I think the pipeline discussion is going to be multi-months and every time we get a new, you know, thought, we need to put it in and say, okay, this is for pipeline discussion.
Okay. All right. Shall we move on down the line?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we have engagement initiatives. That's if we're having a specific initiative that we want to make sure the community is involved in. Like, for example, right now we're trying to make sure we have an email address for everybody. Mm-hmm. We stated a raffle. Okay, feedback mechanism. We actually have this on the website currently, but that's a thing that they include, or that we're including as a draft. Crisis communication plan.
Before you move off of 7, please, again, item 7.2, and I know we have some other things to talk about in terms of response.
Oh, yeah.
But I just want to just make a note here how critical that is, because that is a frequent complaint that we hear from members in the community. Not only that I don't get a timely response, but oftentimes I don't get any response. I don't get any acknowledgement. And sitting here, I don't know whether that's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can certainly always look into that, and sometimes I will inquire about a specific issue, and staff have been very good about providing the information in way of response. We have a couple of those pending right now, I think. I don't, maybe it's a separate item, but I talked to you briefly the other day about the need to come up with a system for tracking the communications that are received. Anecdotally, I was telling Linda earlier in the week when I spoke with her, when I worked for one of the unions, I got lots and lots of calls from members who wanted my assistance. And these are predominantly people that were working out in the field on the highway, so they had limited opportunity to call me. But I would frequently hear, yeah, I left you 3 messages, Booth, and I never heard back. And I knew that wasn't true. More often than not, I had returned a call, got a voicemail, got no answer, whatever. And it wasn't just people in the field. So I said, okay, I'm going to start keeping a phone log. And I had a, you know, one of those the spiral-bound notebooks on my desk. And I had a date for the date at the top. And I had, you know, the entries that I standardized, but date, time, person, topic if they told me. And then my return call date and disposition. And sometimes there were multiple entries for that. But somebody would call and say, yeah, I called you 2 weeks ago. Yes, you did. I got your call on this date at this time. You said you wanted to talk about X. I called you back on this date, left you a message. I called you back on this date, there was no answer. Called you back on this date, there was a busy signal. It took about 2 weeks. I never had another complaint.
So I also used that log.
Uh-huh.
And prior to bringing it in, which I did last week, I had little post-its that I just saved with all that same information, and I transferred them over to my book, because I found my book, and it is such an amazing tool. And I did have a resident who called me, I called back and left a message, then he called again and left sort of a snarky message saying he had called, and I hadn't called back, and I called him back, and I said, you know, I'm really sorry, but I did call you back, and it was on this date at this time, and he said, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't check my messages. So
well, the other, good. Just, I hate to take us off track, but another point in that regard is I learned if I spoke to the person and knew and I needed to do some research or look in or follow up with something, I would give them an estimated completion date. Mm-hmm. So this is Thursday. Yeah. Please give me until next Tuesday. If you haven't heard from me by Tuesday noon, give me a call and find out why. And then I try to every time make sure I either call back Friday afternoon or Monday and beat that time. And what it did was, if it was a longer time frame, it was even more important, those people didn't continue to call and take up time and complain because they knew I'd ask them for a week or 10 days. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that call every other day saying, I haven't heard back from you yet.
Yeah.
And so that's something else to think about, some of these inquiries that we get. I mean, sometimes they come at the podium at a board meeting. Sometimes they call.
Yeah.
They come in the term in way of written communication. But I think also if something is a little more complex or is going to require a little time or there's other priorities that need to be addressed, I think if we can come up with a way of you know, saying, hey, I need till this date, and then I'll get, you know. Now, the key is getting back to them by that date or documenting your attempt to do so, right?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, fine, that's it. Yeah.
So on 7.2, one of the things I think we need to look into is what is our policy? Or do we have a policy? We don't have a policy. So
not off the top of my head, Linda. I can research
okay,
it, but
no,
I'm pretty sure I'm
no policy on that. We need to get one.
Well, I think it would be part of this strategy.
Oh, yeah, I know. I understand. But I'm just...
Yeah, and whether it's a policy or a practice, I know that's a really good point because I always established for myself, I'll call you back within one business day and either tell you I need more time and here's when I'll follow up with the information you've requested,
yeah,
or give you the information or tell you I don't have the information. So I think that's a really good point, Linda, that we include that.
And we
develop some
structure. I mean, a practice, yeah, or a policy. I always think that a policy indicates you're kind of serious about this rather than a practice. You know, people can interpret that in several different ways. So I talked to Tim after the last board meeting, and I said, what happens to all these correspondences? Because, you know, we put them in the packet, and we look at them, and I never hear anything about any of them ever again, and maybe one or two times. If somebody comes to the podium and reads their letter or talks about their communication, then that is actually put into the minutes, and we have a frame of reference. But what kind of action gets taken still is not clear to me, and I don't think I think Tim said he was going to talk to you about it, but
yeah,
I think that's a really important thing to figure out as sooner rather than later, no matter what we do with a lot of other things, because it's a part of the board meeting and it's a part of how we communicate with the community.
So I would agree. When I came here, I was kind of surprised that there was no, you know, follow-up on those things, that there was no conversation even in the meetings, and I've been kind of watching that. But
there's not even any chronicling, is there? I mean, we're not capturing that like we're capturing the CPRA request now, for example.
No.
There's nothing like that going on with these inquiries.
But that's my...
It ends up in the board packet if it's a communication to the board, but...
And so I think I've been really clear about my appreciation for data management. And so one of the things we do have is the PRA request tracker, which says, you know, gives it a number, tells who asked for it, you know, tells which staff got assigned to it, includes the date it was requested. And then Amelia and I actually fleshed it out a little bit because the next step was really just the date it was sent to the requester. But these kinds of things, and then the requested information, but these kinds of requests have a lot of to this person, back to this person, a lot of back and forth. So that's why we mapped out the whole process so we can say, okay, step one, step two, step three. And I am planning to have that be the same model for both written correspondence and people who come to the board meeting to raise a question. And then we will put the answers in here, and that'll facilitate actually posting on the website what the public questions are and how they're included or how they're answered. And then we just have that information, and we get back to them. And same with inquiries from customers. I've also created for staff, and I've shown one of the front desk staff, a little place where when a customer calls up to ask about their account, they can open up this system, and they're looking at the account, and they can put in a request for one day, and they can also see this log of, oh, this person also called last week. This person called 2 months ago, and they asked about this. And then they can just see, and when they're talking to the person, they can say, this has been an ongoing issue for you. I see that. This is not acceptable. We're going to fix this today. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. And all of that really helps to increase the customer's in the community's sense that, oh, they're listening to me and they're trying to fix it, which is the reality. And I think if we don't respond, I think it's just because there's just an overwhelm. And so this will help with that similar to this, and I think I talked about this either last time or at the invoice or at the finance committee, is that we're just going to be receiving electronic invoices. So we're going to be sending out that communication to vendors because there's no ability to see them when they're paper. Mm-hmm. And that consumes a lot of time in determining whether we got it, whether it was approved, when it was approved. So there'll be also this invoice tracker that corresponds to the electronic. And all of that is just part of the overall data management approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's just you're addressing just sound business practice that unfortunately hasn't been implemented in the district. And, you know, each one of them is fairly minor. I know cumulatively it's a lot. And I know that, you know, we have focused on some other priorities. But, you know, these are critical. I'm glad that we're coming up with. And the reason I said practice versus policy is I don't know that we want to ask the board to say you must respond by X time frame. If we develop a policy, I would rather it be a little more general that says we will respond in a timely manner with information and then defer to the general manager or other key staff to determine for each individual request how much time it will take to gather or, you know, research the information. But then the key component is of the policy and provide the response.
Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things that I did in prior jobs, primarily with the invoice tracking, but also with other things of this nature, is to produce sort of an exception report so that you could see not the whole, you know, number of invoices, but those that were unpaid after a certain time frame. And so it's easy to do that with the PRA requests that are lingering out there that are still not done, mm-hmm. and to be able to delve into those and to say what's going on and to be able to, you know, not have these lingering things. And I think one thing that we did not build into the PRA request, which you just suggested, which I think was a really good idea, is just sending out an email saying, we got your thing, and mm-hmm. we're going to respond to it. Give us, you know, a little bit of time, and we'll get back to you. And then we'll get back to you with an estimate of completion.
It's a little more than that, because as you probably know, the statute requires that we respond within 10 days. So there
PRAs, I think it is that does happen.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the other kinds of requests.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't remember I haven't looked at the PRA log in a few days. I don't recall if there's a date for the initial response. We got it. We're going to need more time, and then another date for, hey, we finally got it all done.
Yeah.
I think there is, right?
We generally say it's going to take, we plan on having this information in 30 days or 10 days or after that initial 10 days. But with the one that you're referencing for the emails, that was responded to that there is a lot of information that has to be, right?
No, and so all I'm asking, Amelia, is it's a little more finite.
Okay.
On the log, do we capture when that initial response goes, hey, you've asked for buku information, going to take us a long time, we'll get it to you, and then on the other end of the page, a date saying, hey, we finally finished and gave you everything you asked for.
And
I don't think
we have it, but we'll just build it in. It's just like another field. We put it into the process.
And the reason I ask for that is I want to show compliance with the law, right?
Yeah.
As a minimum. And then we document, as Amelia just described, it's going to take us 30 days, I mean, unfortunately, we're talking 15, 16 months now. You know, on some of these. And I understand the process and I understand the volume because you shared that with me.
Initially, Steve, there were thousands.
That is 4,500 emails, so that is thousands. But I think some of these PRA requests that we have data on, they date back to 21 or something. Yeah. So the first
The
only ones that are pending are from 2022, if I recall correctly.
Yes, that's right.
Everything else. But there were some when I first started here dating back to 2021, if I recall correctly. And it's so anathema to me as a person who in more than one capacity over the years has had to respond through council to CPR, because that's how we handled it the last 5 years I worked at SACRT. Our council handled all the CPRA, but she would hold our feet to the fire. And Steve, if you got to work all weekend to get this done, you know, I'll talk to the general manager if you need me to. I mean, that never happened, obviously, but I mean, it was that we were that committed. And sometimes we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of documents, you know, and oftentimes we didn't have the problem with redaction of personal information. Mm-hmm. That wasn't really what we had. That happened a lot of times, however, when I was at CalHR, you know, handling personnel records and confidential negotiation stuff. There's a lot of exceptions that we could claim. That's why I try now, as you've seen, I try to always identify if I've included our lawyer and said, this is because this is a privileged communication.
Yeah.
And makes those kinds of searches easier in the future. But I'm, you know, as I shared with you last week, I'm not really sure how potent those outstanding requests are today, as I understand what the issues were that drove those requests.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if they're really still, you know, ripe or not, but we need to complete the process
and then
just figure out if we have this kind of request in the future, we need to find a more efficient way to deal with that.
And there's one positive thing there in that Andrew's office has hired a new attorney, and he is... I get the feeling he's starting his career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and
okay.
So he'll be taking care of those that we have for the redactions from now on. So that's...
Hopefully at a reduced hourly rate.
Exactly.
And then I don't have to send it over to, you know, somebody in Southern California who were just in the mix and the... I mean, were their client.
Yeah, well, and as I shared earlier...
Linda's next.
as I shared... It's my understanding that there was a commitment made that there'd be one last production in September, and I understand that since then stuff has had to be sent back and reviewed multiple times, which complicates that answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that requestor is necessarily aware of that dynamic. And so to that requestor, you promised me the last batch in September. Here I am in December, and I still don't have it. So we need to work on that. Linda, I'm sorry.
I am the chairman. So when it comes to the PRAs, and you've developed do you call it a policy or a process, or what are you calling it?
A process, more.
Process, okay.
And a log.
Okay. Can we have, first of all, outline of what you guys have developed, or
I brought that. That one is just one page of 2022 stuff, which is 63 requests. Not all of them.
So these are the actual requests. Okay.
So these are the actual requests, but what it does not include, because I just gave you a snapshot here, it doesn't include all those steps. So what I talked about, Amelia and I had a conversation and said, okay, what happens next, right? So what's step one, step two, step three? So we have about, I think, 15 of those. And I'll show you on a different day what that looks like. But the idea is that if we put in those steps, then we can generate a report that shows you, you know, incomplete ones that are in process, and then we can sort them by the stage that they're at. Are they with the redactors? Are they, you know, in their initial review? Are they at the attorney? And that way, we'll be able to see it, you know.
Well, there's only one person.
Well, no, there are multiples. John Merchant has some on, maybe on, maybe he's in 23.
Okay.
And then Mr. Gears has requested.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
so
I think there's a couple other
Mike Martell has
Mike
one.
Martell
has one that's outstanding.
Okay.
And, but we can't. If we don't have the information, we can't give you the information.
But it doesn't exist. Well, yeah, the answer in that regard is we are not in possession of any records responsive to your request.
That's the NRR.
That's it. I notice here that you have on this document a field for date acknowledged. None of those are filled in. So that should be within that 10 days from April 20 on that first inquiry.
So this is historic data?
No, I understand. So I'm just saying.
It predates that, but I agree.
Right. So that was what I was looking for, was we acknowledge and we say, maybe we say there is no record responsive.
Right.
Maybe we say, here's the document you asked for. Maybe we say we're going to need 20 days. Okay, and then the date sent to requester, I'm assuming, is the date that we actually provided the records that were requested. And, you know, there's a fine line, and I don't know how Mr. Ramos would advise this group. I felt that counsel, when I was at SAC-RT, I thought was more demanding of us in terms of interpreting the CPRA, in terms of we're not required to create documents to respond to a request. But I've had more than one lawyer at different places say, yeah, that's true, but if you have a record from which you can reasonably extract the information that is requested and put into a new document, that's better than long-term fighting over production. I don't know that we have any of those situations, but
we do. And when Paula was here, she extracted information and put it into a friendly format that the person who's requesting it can easily understand.
But again,
and extract the information, right? Because
But the key is reasonably available.
Yeah.
And, but on the other hand, you know, our lawyer said you can't just take the NRR out, you know, when you know the information's there and you could collect it and, you know, provide it. So
can I go back to policy? You were talking about a policy. And recently we had somebody who had an incident with the gate arm who I sent over to the insurance company. The insurance company denied the claim. And I have a policy now that the general manager can deny those kinds of claims that are coming in, like when the person was trying to sue every district, remember, in California? But we also had, it's not a policy, it was just voted on in like 2017, that the general manager can take care of those kinds of like auto claims for up to $10,000, that she can deny the claim, it doesn't have to come to the board. And if I wouldn't have been looking for something else and just rifling through old board packets, I wouldn't have seen that. So a policy is a good idea because then the information is more easy to find. And it's not...
And maybe
you know, I mean, and it's up to you, but I'm not going to be here in 10 years. And so...
Yeah, we've run into that. And maybe, to me, a policy is more specific and a little bit more binding than...
And I don't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Back 23 years ago, I think, I was involved in a comprehensive audit of a program, a state program that had federal funding. And one of the requirements, I'd been there a year, I think, and when we got audited, and it had been audited, and it was a mess. Not as big a mess as this one, but it was a mess. And one of the things was, one of the foundational items of a strong organization was an existing policies and procedures manual.
Mm-hmm.
And it governs, you know, sometimes it's called the desk manual for different areas and whatnot. And I think there's a distinction between sort of that practical policies and procedures thing and then what gets established at the board level bigger policy.
Okay.
But what I have talked to Mark about in terms of needing for the finance and admin approach is just what are our policies and procedures for how we do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we track those. We hang on to them. And then to Amelia's point that she kind of came upon another policy looking for something else. Right now I have an enormous binder of all the policies that's under my laptop, and I've got the index of the policies. But these policies are on our website by year. Mm-hmm. So you can't do a comprehensive search. So that's another area of improvement that is on my list of putting all those policies into a database where you can do a search for government claims or PRAs or communications, and that way everything comes up. And you can say active policy, inactive policy, you know, and when it was last reviewed, and you have a more comprehensive approach, you can easily generate a list of all those policies, and you can still retain when it happened and whatnot. So that'll be, you know, just like we talked about in the finance and admin, that part of the rebuilding, things that you would normally just take for granted as part of a normal business operation. Mm-hmm. So that's going to happen. Yeah.
So two things. Number one, in relation to that, I'm happy that we're doing this because sometimes when you think about communication or when we talk about communication, we're talking about communicating to the community. Mm-hmm. And in this discussion, we're talking about communicating with each other, which I think, and also the community, but having that kind of stuff organized and information available to people in the office, you know, staff, I think that's a great...
Yeah, so we're all on the same page.
Well, it's interesting.
And the second thing...
Oh, I'm sorry, that's what we're doing.
Is that... I wanted to go back for a minute to the requests. Is there at this point? I don't know how old all of these are, but the oldest ones. Is there a way to look at them fairly quickly and say this is done? I mean,
oh, yeah.
We're finished with that.
There's only nine pending, right?
I think it might be fewer than that.
Some of those got eliminated by the batching?
Crystal. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Four from Crystal, Mark Madelich.
Mike Martell.
Sorry. too many MM people here. So those five, and...
There were four from Richard Gears, four from Crystal Matter, one
right.
from Mike Martell that were pending with that summary that you sent him. So, Linda, after the last board meeting when Crystal,
mm-hmm. yeah,
Crystal
right.
appeared...
And she asked about them.
Yeah, I followed up with mm-hmm. Mimi and Amelia and got... This was the first time I saw this tracker, which was... It's great, because it's a good development from what we originally started talking about, Amelia, right? So there were nine of them pending at that point in time. I don't know if any of the subsequent email batches have cleared any of those.
How many did Richard have?
Four.
But he was asking for those same emails that Crystal asked.
For the most part.
Oh,
they were,
okay.
For the
yeah,
most
were,
part, there was an overlap,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah, so those are there. So I'll let Amelia
and Mike's was the only
status.
Mike's was the only recent one.
Yeah,
exactly.
And his, we just got the GASB information, which goes to the actuary, and then which goes to... then they evaluate the existing resources and then they determine the unfunded liability now that they have.
Was that pension or OPEB?
OPEB. Yeah, so that one, they said it would take them, the actuary, 6 to 8 weeks, you know, to turn it around.
Okay.
So that's out there. I mean, that was like 3 years of data on,
mm-hmm.
you know, people's ages and their dependents' ages. The complexity of it was
right.
there wasn't a good tracking of the employees, the retirees, and their dependents. And that won't be that complicated in the years going forward because now we have a good data system to track all that stuff, which we should have had, again, to begin with. There's some traffic that happened the last couple of days that made me think that we were close on the Crystal stuff.
Yes, because I got... So it went to the emails went to our attorney. Our attorney said, no, this and this, list like this had to be still redacted. Mm-hmm. I sent it back, and I had two productions that I sent back, 9 and 10, and she sent back production number 10. Gavin over at our attorney's office looked at it. He only had a list like that of things that still needed. So number 10 is back, hopefully for final redaction, and number 9, they're... still working on. And I'm at the point where I'm following up with them in multiple emails every day.
And 10 is a subset of what we had before, right? It's not a new batch.
It's
what had to be recycled, if you will,
yeah,
for further
right.
review.
And okay. how they determined I had four requests.
Yeah.
And then they, and then
because it got turned into 10.
Right. It got 10 turned into 10 productions.
Production batches.
Batches.
Right.
Exactly.
Calling it production
exactly.
Batches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I have also got from them all, because another thing was the links expired. So I've gotten back unexpired links for the first 8 that are fine and finalized and redacted. And then when I get 9 and 10, I'll send everything back over to Crystal and I'll...
Links meaning telling the requester, here's where your information can be found.
And then they go onto the internet and they can look individually at every email. And every attachment on every email.
So, when you say Crystal has 4 requests, are there sub-requests or are those... 4 specific requests. I'm sorry.
They're in here, I think, because this is they're from 22.
They're 4 specific requests looking for a bunch of emails, and
that's what I'm trying to.
Yeah, and the attorney that redacted them broke them up into 10 different batches or productions.
So it's not really that there's 4 left. There's multitudes underneath that one request.
Exactly.
There's multiple records, but there's only one request.
Yes.
Want all the emails between X, Y, and Z between this date and that date.
That's what I'm...
And so it was hundreds of records.
That's what 40, I'm looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it sounds... It makes... If you say there's 4 requests, it sounds like, well, why can't we get that done?
Right.
It's not 1, 2, 3, 4. It's one...
It's like a
right.
whole time range
right.
and all the emails during that time
okay.
range.
It was like a 3-year time frame or something.
Okay.
It was like 18 to 22.
Yeah.
So that's where we get the number of thousands, right?
Of records.
And then those records had to be called.
Right.
And so of those 4,500, I have one that's got 375 and one that's less than that.
So for the sake of communication, one thing that we might want to do is make note of it or open it for discussion or whatever to let people know that it's not one request. It's,
right.
It's one request with multitude of research things that have to happen.
Exactly. It's not like, can I please have this report? Here's the one report.
Yeah, right.
Can I please have... These 4,500 reports?
Right.
Send me a copy of policy XYZ.
Yeah.
I got that. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and that's what's made these so challenging.
And having so many people in the mix and emails going back and forth and then having, you know.
Because we didn't have a policy.
I don't think it was really the policy, but, you know, I want to also say, like, Amelia is busy. Every single second of the day that she's here, she's moving around.
It's not
so this request came in, you know, a year and a half ago, and she's like the glue holding it all together. And then this need to go through 45, and she couldn't get to it. But then she met somebody at some conference, and they said, we do that. And then, so there was a long delay while it was like this burdensome workload that couldn't be addressed.
It was from August until November when I went to the conference when Tom and I were just kind of saying, what company possibly redacts all of these emails?
Right,
and
right.
just having, and then I went
and
to the...
Or collects them, so it was a kind of multiple...
Two thoughts.
Yeah, it took a month for IT to get them back to me.
Go ahead, Linda.
So what I'm trying to get at is that we need to have a way to explain and express to people what this process really is and why it takes so long to get through this. And I don't think we've ever done that, really. And I'm not sure exactly how to do that, if we should send individual emails to people who have made the requests. Or in some format, let the residents know.
I'm going to include it as a topic in my general manager's report from here on out.
Okay.
Plus, I think I provided a PR request report. I couldn't find it in the meeting materials, but maybe it was in a closed session.
I think you just sent it to me after the meeting.
No, it was before. It was before that I had shared it with everybody because I worked on this in August, I think.
Couple of thoughts. One, I think Amelia, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that explanation that Linda just said should go to the requester. I think you have provided that kind of explanation to them. We have had some discussion in board meetings about that process as well. Mimi, I think it actually preceded you, and I think it may have come up since you've been here in terms of this process of these 4,500 records that have. I like the tracker, and I think that this tracker is a document that is subject to public review as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, maybe that's just, and I don't know if we have that posted someplace on our website, or if we just simply need to have it on the website so people can refer to it,
or if we
want to respond to individual inquiries, I don't know. So that's one thought, please. The other, Amelia and Mimi, I understand the inundation, but had any of these requests been taken into Superior Court, I am confident a judge would not have found Amelia is too busy to be an adequate response from the district, not from you, but from the district, for not complying with the law. And so I think that we need to think about going forward, were we to receive that kind of volume of requests in the future, we might think about hiring somebody on a temporary basis to do that. It might be cheaper in the long run than having to hire legal counsel to do it.
Don't you have a company? Didn't you say at your...
I did. I sent it to an attorney's office.
It's a law firm, so we're paying legal fees.
Yes.
Not clerical fees.
It's incredibly expensive. And so my, you know, if you go back to why do we have a communication policy, and one of these sub-items here is to enhance community engagement and trust. And... you know, promote responsible, well, that's waste management, but to increase awareness about the services provided by the district. I have never seen such an abundance of PRA requests, and I think if you look at all of them, a lot of them are in that period of time in July, August of 22, when there was a lot of emotion and there was a lot of anger about the management of the district. And I think our goal has to be we manage it well. We're serving the public. That is our job. We do not waste resources, and we take care of things in an appropriate manner. And to the extent that that happens, I think things calm down, right? This is an extreme situation, and we have probably spent just on the, okay, so let's just say there's three or four steps, right? Us, the IT people to pull, at least these email ones, the attorney that was, you know, going through them first, the attorney that then is redacting, and then back to us. Just that one step beyond the IT is like $50,000 so far. $50,000 that this organization really doesn't have to spare. That's actually residents' money. And so we need
all
to...
All residents' money.
It's all the residents,
and
all the customers.
So that, to me, says we can't afford to indulge in the future, you know, I mean, we have to answer them, but we can't afford to indulge in kind of permitting this.
I think we're obligated to respond to public requests for information.
Right.
And
but we need to get out to the community how much this is costing.
And I'm going to share that in my report.
They're the same group of people who were submitting all these, you know, RFPs. Are the people who are saying we're wasting money?
Well, but I think maybe they weren't wrong, right? I think that there were some things that were going on that were not, you know, we're talking about how there weren't systems in place. It was not a well-run, you know, what you said
is
like normal business practices.
I understand.
And so when those things aren't in place and the cost of doing business is higher and it's inefficient, and all that hits the backs of the ratepayers, then that is something that I understand them arguing about, you know, and being angry about, right? So our job, we have to let them, you know, complain about that and to ask for information about it, but our job is to clean it up. That's my perspective as GM.
And the nature and timing of the requests that were made, as I think I shared in an email with you, Mimi, several days ago, I think there were two critical issues One of them had to do with the discipline and termination of a former employee, and the other had to do with
budget
and security and the request for the public to pass Measure R. Mm-hmm. And you know, I am led to believe, without breaching any specific confidences, that there may have been some specific documents that requesters had reason to believe existed, but rather than ask for those specifically, they asked for a broad base. And I had to do that myself as an advocate in the past in terms of discovery for administrative hearings. I don't want to let them know I know exactly where the smoking gun is, so I'll ask for a broad spectrum. Okay. So that I can hide it. And I'm speculating, and I may be maybe over-projecting in that regard. And that's, yeah. But that's why I say I think those were the issues that drove these requests at the time, and unfortunately we're still paying the price for those issues that have since become moot, both of them. Yeah. One was about, well, actually, they both were about former, well, two former employees, you know, and then the security budget. You know, those are what those requests were all about, and the belief that there was some inappropriate dealings going on behind the scenes.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful for me to gain the historical context on that. And just in the context of records, I want to tell you both that last, I think, Thursday? Can't remember when, maybe Wednesday. We were transitioning all the boxes of old documentation for AP, AR, and invoices from the storage trailer, which was costing us roughly $300 a month, into the offices here, because the storage trailer was always either 110 degrees or 40 degrees, mm-hmm, and not mm-hmm. conducive to evaluating the records.
Being in there and looking at records.
Yeah, to be able to determine, you know, whether their time was up from a record retention perspective. And it took 2 days and a couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours each day, to pull them in, right? Because we had to put it in a truck and bring them over. On the second day, before we'd even started, I received an inquiry from Crystal Matter saying that she had heard we were shredding, which was not accurate. We were going to be evaluating before mm-hmm. we would shred, and asking that the records and the shredding and the, you know, all that be videotaped. And so I did sit on that for a little bit, because I was like, first off, I was like, how did she get told this? And how come it's escalated to the idea of shredding when all we were doing was trying to save the organization money? And so then I wanted to talk to Andrew about our obligation to videotape, because that's a huge expense. And most of this stuff, I mean, like, it's shocking how much was retained. It's like there were hoarders here. There are tax or residence checks bundled with the deposit slip with a rubber band around it, and those have got to be like 20 years old. So that information, you know, that should not have been retained. It should have been shredded within a month of deposit, mm-hmm. right? Because you have somebody's bank account information. There's all sorts of violations with that. So Andrew was sick. And then I didn't get to talk to him until Monday night. And then I said, can I send you a draft? And he said, yes, absolutely, because I want to make sure that I respond in a way that's consistent with the legal requirements. And then his office is relocating to a new place, and so I haven't heard back from him yet. But with this concept of just tell them I got it and I'll get it. I mean, we get that all the time from ITS. We tell them, hey, we need help. And I think my perspective is, doesn't mean a thing to me. They tell me, okay, we got your thing, but then it takes them like 2 or 3 days, which is why we're pursuing some right. other alternatives. But I think I should have responded to her immediately and said I got it. Frankly, I was a little, you know, kind of like, wow, that isn't even accurate.
Remind me after this meeting, individual, to talk to you about IT.
Okay.
I have a potential solution.
Okay.
Do we have a records retention policy?
Yes, we do.
Absolutely. Yes, okay. We do. I need to update it, but we do.
So to the extent that we haven't destroyed records that are archaic pursuant to that policy.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I'm aware of that would foreclose us from destroying those that are outside the parameters is a pending request for records.
Right.
And so even if it was outside, if we still had it, we wouldn't be able to destroy that record until we provided it to the requester. But
and then there is, as part of the policy, I have to provide the board with a resolution that says I'm going to be shredding, you know, all the accounts receivable from 1999, 2000, 2001.
And who do you give that to?
Right. And then the board, I bring that to the board so that you know.
Informational item, probably.
Okay.
It's a resolution.
Has that ever been done before?
But say it again.
No. Has that ever been done before?
I can't answer that right now. But I will answer it by the next time
it's
right.
You're not off the top of your head,
off
you don't
top of my
recall
head, no.
it occurring in the time frame you've been here.
Oh, certainly not.
Which speaks to the volume of archaic records.
Yeah, you can see it's taken up a whole room.
Yeah. Two offices.
And we were also concerned about rat infestation because there were droppings from the trailer.
Well, so all kinds of vermin, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, the whole thing, the trailer just, for me, was... $300 a month might not seem very much, but to me it was just
a
symbol of
right.
how poorly the organization had dealt with their data. So,
well, and that's just consistent with so many other things.
Absolutely.
And the inability to track the data, I think, lends itself to some of the problems that we encounter with requests from or comments from the community. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that there's a communication that I'm sure will be in the board packet, you know, later this month, and in individually discussing the communication with the sender, he said to me, "Why do I know this stuff, but none of them do?" And I think some of it speaks to the fact that some of the stuff is not well indexed. And that particular individual has a lot of experience with the district and others, but it also, and this will be a comment that I will repeat at the board meeting, I think it speaks to the need for our key leadership to be more focused on researching. I mean, I remember asking a question, there was a question that came before the board. You know, so it's a communication from a member, and I don't recall now who it was or what the specific issue was, but because of a different inquiry entirely to me, I was aware of a document that I thought addressed it, and yet our director of operations wasn't aware of that document, or at least wasn't aware that that subject was covered in that document.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that that should have been the first place that he or someone should have gone to look. So as you're developing these business practices and the policy,
mm-hmm.
you know, policies and procedures, one of the things I undertook at SAC-RT was a complete revision of our personnel policies and procedures. And it was a 150-page document or something like that. But there was an intermixture of policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did, and this is why I'm kind of tuned into policy versus something other than policy,
right.
is we adopted general policies, and that document went to the board of directors, 13-member board of directors there, for approval, and in many cases it specifically authorized management, and this is human resources and personnel policies, to develop procedures. So we didn't have to take exactly how we did it back to the board. We just had to develop a procedure that was compliant with what the board direction was. And I know, Mimi, you're familiar with that same kind of approach with your state experience, because the same kind of things, you know, are you've got regulations and then you've got, you know, authority that's given
sure.
to individual departments to implement, you know, with their own procedural documents.
And the most important thing is that it's memorialized.
Well,
so that when, you know, because Suzanne left and gave me literally nothing except her computer. So I have been trying to follow breadcrumbs and recreate what happened and why.
Absolutely, and that's precisely our first line of defense. Defense is the wrong word. Our first line of response when we have an inquiry or a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a document that's responsive to it, mm-hmm. or that specifies here's how we do it and here's why, mm-hmm. then that should be, but we need to start capturing that and, like you say, indexing and because yeah. I think that's going to enhance our ability to respond to the public
and build confidence.
Yes.
That's
the bottom line. That's our goal.
So I just want to address the issue of lack of awareness of those docs. Yeah. Right now, I'm laser focused on the money and the administration, right, where the data has been problematic. But my next targets are operations and security, where there is similarly bad data management, right, where they just don't have the tools. And so that's going to be, as soon as I get this, maybe two of the audits done, then I'm going to shift gears and help with that, because we should have a functional database of different aspects of their activities and clear and, you know, automatic.
I appreciate that response, but again, I'm thinking about this one specific issue, and for a person who has been here as Director of Ops and Interim General Manager, the nature of that question and the nature of the document to which I referred
was basic.
I'm at a loss why he wasn't already aware of that document.
Okay.
It had to do with drainage.
Okay.
I think it was in the context of discussing the drainage gutters around Chesbro.
The
and I was familiar with that document because of a discussion I had with another individual in the public on a different issue.
And I don't know if you're aware of the recent issue over there and the V ditches saving the day, essentially, you know, from a sewage spill. No.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that.
There were it was resolved very quickly. There was very responsive nature, but there was a manhole that had been covered up by AstroTurf by the homeowner, and then there was a very large tree root that had gotten into the sewer line.
Creating
the sewer line not being visible, or because it was under the AstroTurf, mm-hmm. so it missed getting cleaned up. And so that goes to, well, don't we have a listing of all the manholes in a database so you can say, when did this one get cleaned out, when did this? But then it created a clog, and there was an overflow of sewage, and then it went into the drainage ditch. And if that drainage ditch had not been cleaned out,
would have been in a Chesbro.
It could have been a potentially problematic situation.
Wow.
So that's why I'm saying at least four times a year we're going to clean out that V ditch, and I don't care how long it takes, yeah. but that has to happen. And I want to send a thank you note to Candace, for bringing that to my attention, because she worked, I think she's 80 years old, and I think she worked for 7 hours to clean up a length of ditch, not only in front of her house, but all the way down to the end, to the east on her piece. And if that had not been cleaned out, and district staff did go out after that and do it again, because it's a time of year when there's a lot of stuff coming in, but that was preventive maintenance. And you have to do preventive maintenance on any kinds of operations and equipment. And so that has to be captured in another tracker, right, where you're like, did the preventive maintenance happen? So that's where I'm going to shift. And I agree that lack of awareness is baffling. But we're going to make it so that these things are institutionalized.
And for what it's worth, William Payne is the one, P-A-Y-N-E, is the one who brought it to my attention. He's one of Candy's neighbors.
Oh, okay.
A good friend of mine lives across the street from us.
Yeah.
But that's how I came to get involved in the discussion. Bill said, hey, did you know blah, blah, blah is going on out here? And
he's referring to the...
to Candy being out there cleaning the ditch herself.
Yeah.
And that's why that's the reason I was able to reach out to you and ask about it.
Yeah.
Because Bill Payne had brought it to my attention.
Yeah.
And for future reference, if you're looking for sewer covers, there's one immediately adjacent to the north of the residence at 6442 Camino del Lago.
It's being covered up?
No. No.
Oh, okay.
I was just, you were talking about tracking where they were located.
Yeah.
I'm being glib. It's it's right next to my property.
Okay.
I think that they're all on GIS.
They probably are.
They are, but...
But then we need a master list and then a maintenance list. And
yes. Yeah, because it should be, you know, once a year that they go in and check. Because we have scopes, we can check. But mm-hmm. The root that was, one of our guys was holding it up, and it looked like he had just caught a huge salmon,
yeah.
you know, huge fish. Just, it was
thick
stout,
and, yeah.
and it was
mm-hmm.
long.
But,
it was a root.
And all of this discussion is probably a little off topic, except that everything we've talked about is a way, as you said a couple of times, Mimi, of restoring confidence in the community, and that has to be our primary communication goal. That and communicating, and you haven't gotten to crisis communication, but obviously, you know, and that's probably a place where we are most lacking right now, because we don't have the ability to immediately communicate with folks.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think we can continue to go down the list, but we might also think about saving the rest of this for another time, because we allocated about an hour, and I got to get to the airport guy.
Okay.
The airport topic. But with regard to the crisis communication plan, we do have Code Red. But Code Red
right.
has been escalating in cost from 5 to 6 to 8 a year. And so to the extent...
1,000.
Yes,
yeah.
1,000. And so to the extent that we get all of our customers' email and cell phones, we can do that internally, right? And
right.
so there's many examples of that where that responsibility for communicating directly to our customers had to be farmed out because there wasn't any organization here and
right.
collection of data. And so it's just like another example.
So we get that established, and then it's simply a matter of maintenance once a year, sending out a request to update if there's any changes.
Yeah.
And then another, when we have our own database, we'll have every single person. With Code Red, it's voluntary that they will sign up for it or not.
We'll have whoever provides the information to us, at least. It may not be every resident. But I know we went through a similar drill, again, at SAC-RT, 1,300 employees. And we found out when there was an emergency, an injured employee, severely injured employee, and... off regular business hours, and management had difficulty contacting his spouse to let her know he'd been transported in critical condition to the hospital.
Yeah.
And that's when it blew up on us.
Yeah.
And we said, we need to go out now periodically and make sure, because employees move, they change their phones, whatever. So, all right. Well, Linda, I know we haven't discussed the whole thing yet. I like the template that I'm looking at here. Obviously, some of this stuff needs to be fleshed out. This is going to be an ongoing conversation.
Yeah. I have a couple of things. This 7.2, the feedback mechanism, and the content calendar. I think it's the content calendar. No. There were... Where was it? Communication channels. I'm sorry, but I know we went through something further back. Is also a part of that. I know what it was. The feedback mechanism 7.2, as far as people, residents getting a chance to get a response from their correspondence
mm-hmm.
with us. That's what that was all about. And then, but that's connected to. I'm sorry.
Like a communication tracker. So I'm proposing having.
I've gotten just. I don't know. I think we've been. We jumped around a lot, and I've lost my train of thought. So never
mind. It's a comprehensive strategy. So it is a lot of information, and that's why I kind of think we should do it over multiple meetings, because it has generated a lot of healthy discussion, I think, about some of the operational aspects, which, you know, have an impact on the communication. So that, I mean, I understand, like, how it could be, because we've jumped around, mm-hmm. you know, it is, yeah. it's a lot.
It is a lot, and I'm just commenting on the fact that because we've jumped around, I hope somebody's keeping notes. I feel like we've come up with a lot of great ideas, but I feel like everything is all, you know, all over the place.
So I propose before our next committee meeting, we review these, Linda, and look at the proposed key messages on the back page and come back with any recommendations that you and I have specific to any of those things we haven't covered. And to promote some further discussion.
And I apologize for not getting this to you sooner. I was all about money up until yesterday.
I understand.
That would have been nice, I think, for you to have had it in advance, mm-hmm. you know, so you could look at it before here. And that's just me juggling
and
adjusting
that.
Time. But so I think it's good if you take it home and look at it, and then, you know, like Director Booth suggested, you can look at the proposed key messages and you can come back with comments, and then you can keep going and view it as a dynamic discussion.
I just want to make sure that the suggestions and the comments that we've made, and I do think that 7.2 was connected to 5 to ensure regular communications. I'll have to look at that again, but I just want to make sure, I mean, there's good ideas here, and I want to make sure we get those put out or put together as a an outcome of this particular communications meeting.
One thing.
With these particular subjects. Wherever we've had an opportunity to say this is what we need, or this is would benefit from a policy statement or a way of addressing these things, I don't want that to get lost in the process.
One thing Amelia can attest to is I'm a prodigious note taker, and I write on my documents, and then I go through them and I pull out action items, and I do that for every single topic that I'm responsible for, and I will get back to you with that.
Well, next month, the committee.
We'll take it.
Although,
out.
Actually, I have to say, we're going to ask. I have to have a surgery at the end of the month, and I won't be physically here until maybe the 11th of January. I'm hoping I can work remotely, but we may have to postpone or push back a little bit.
I was going to request to push back both my committee meetings to the second week of January.
Okay.
Because I will be out of town.
Okay.
The first week.
That's fine, as long as we have it.
Yeah.
So I do the schedule for the board meeting, I'll say proposed, and I'll let the rest of the board know that we're asking that.
The 11th falls on what day of the week?
That's a Thursday. That's the second Thursday in January.
So finance otherwise would meet on the 2nd and communications on the 4th.
That's correct.
So
so then I do ask for patience in the minutes have been prepared. I'll have them done for the board, you know, the day of the board meeting, but it's a quick turnaround, and I'm a slow timer.
So
I'll let the rest of the board know that we're asking for that.
So we are not going to do 5 or 6 today, and we are not going to finish 4 today. Is that right?
Let's go back to the agenda and see what's on there, Linda. I can't remember.
Yeah, I recommend just digesting this, and then we pick up the conversation again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next one.
I did want to just say one thing, and that is that I think the pipeline, as we have it listed here, you know, that it's an indirect discussion item. I think that it is important. I mean, all of these different things that we're going to attempt to organize and make specific and make make something out of it. I think some of them are easier than others, but I think the pipeline is big, I think the pipeline is going to take up several meetings. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that almost from the pipeline you can take information that you can want to put on email or you want to put or on a website. And I know the pipeline goes on the website, but sometimes there's specific information that needs to go there. And also,
and I also grab information from the board meeting every month.
Right.
Right? That's the hot topics that are here.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a complete overhaul of the pipeline, and that's going to take some time.
And I would just say that this agenda was prepared prior to the finalization of the strategy, and really the pipeline and these direct and indirect, these channels, they really are part of the communication strategy.
Right.
And they should be just considered in that context and not as a separate topic. And I apologize for sort of muddying the waters on this, but that I think will be captured, you know, within the strategy, because it's part of that how, you know, how and what, and how do you, what's your mechanism, what's your channel, and so in that you have, you know, the pipeline, and you have all these other things as well,
right?
Your social
but
media.
But the pipeline is the thing that seems to require the most time, the most
well, it's money as well. It's about $3,000 a month to send that out. So yeah, I think it's good to, you know, look at all of those pieces in the context of the comprehensive communication strategy.
So RMA,
I wasn't saying that it wasn't important. All I'm saying is that when it comes to doing some of these, the email process you're already working on, but text, the website, the Facebook page, and there was something else that I wanted to talk about today, which was the fact that we actually do have a Nextdoor account through Sacramento County Public Information Office. And I ran into this. This is from 2021. It was when Tom was here. So we do have a Nextdoor account.
Yeah, and I think that's something we have to talk about when we get to the channels. And there are resource limitations, you know, and so we have to decide which channels we support. Because there's a lot of volume in each of those different social media channels. And I think we have to identify what our priority channels are as part of this, you know, comprehensive strategy.
Well, I think to the extent that we can get comprehensive email listing, then that supersedes as a primary communication vehicle the other vehicles, Facebook, Nextdoor, whatever,
because
we can directly communicate with the entire population.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not they avail themselves to read it is really no less uncertain than whether or not they're going to read the pipeline when they open up their utility bill.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Can you finish the meeting and call for public comment and direct comment?
Right.
Thank you.
Obviously, there's no public, so we can't have any comments from the public.
And there could be written comments, but there aren't, right?
There could be written comments, but no, there are not.
Directors and staff, any other comments?
No.
Okay.
No, I've spoken over Director Butler enough today.
Thank you for recognizing that. My God. So, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Director Booth.